Accession number 18767, Reel 1.
This is an interview with Mr. Ken Chambers, a former flight line superintendent on the Berlin Airlift, recorded by Rodney Giesler on the 22nd of February 2000 for the Imperial War Museum Sound Archive.
Okay, I think, Ken, right at the beginning, before we get to the Berlin Airlift, can you give me a bit of your background? Where and when were you born?
I was born in Plymouth. You want it, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was born in Plymouth on the 4th of February 1920. I was there until I was 16. And then I joined up. I went to Holton as an aircraft apprentice.
Oh, yeah.
So,
what was your father doing?
My father was ex-naval writer in the Navy, but he'd come out of that and was a civil servant in the dockyard down there. The counts used to do that. But my mother was actually my stepmother, because my mother, actual biological mother, she died in childbirth, you know, to me.
Yeah.
And but I never knew it was my stepmother till I joined up, you know, and because all the medicals you got at Holton, you had a doctor for every part of your body, you know. And of course, Sticky beat me, so I looked on some of his documents that he was writing on, and I saw stepmother, and I was quite taken aback, you know. But didn't make me odd. She's a mother to me, you know. I'd known her as a baby, you know.
So at 16, you went up to Holton.
I went to Holton for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we were all posted. I was posted at Upper Hayford, which isn't far from here. And then the war started, and when we all went out to France, I was stationed with 57 Squadron. That was Blenheim bombers.
What were your fitter on it?
Yeah. At a place called Lyon. It was L-I-H-O-N, Lyon. And we were living in the village, you know, in various billets and all that. Of course, then we got the inevitable chase out, you know, and we all had to leave. The airplanes all flew out, and we got ourselves back to Boulogne and come home, you know.
Was that before Dunkirk?
Oh, it was before Dunkirk, yes, indeed.
So it wasn't quite such a panic?
No, and I'd already had some leave, and I came home. You know, they allowed us to come go on leave. I used to take home a lot of butter and sugar and all that, and we pack, you know, for my mum and me, you know, because the rationing was here. So, I came back, and then I went to various places. The squadron, well, I'll tell you where we stayed to start with, at Gatwick. And we were all billeted in the grandstand, you know. And from there, where did we go from there? It's a long time ago to remember all this.
What were you, an airframe fitter or what?
Well, it was what they called a fitter two. If I was trained in two trades, airframe and engines. Some of the other chaps who became FAE, like engine fitters and airframe fitters, they could take a course afterwards, and they came out as what they called a fitter one. And they had both trades then, you see. But, it was really good. I've never regretted joining up, you know. And
when all your at Lyon in France, when all your planes flew out, how far was that away from the whole collapse?
Was
that about April?
That was about April. That's right. That was about April. We were a good way away, I think, but it was in range of bombing, you see. And then they used to bomb it. We had to dig ourselves slit trenches and all that. Because we were only under canvas, you see, when we went out in the field. Lyon was all right because we had billets. But then we moved from there. I suspect we were moving back. And then we lived under canvas, you know, and we had to dig slit trenches and all that caper. And then we had to bolt from there back to Boulogne. And of course, it was most embarrassing because you're going along the road, the same way as the refugees were going, you know, which was a bit off, wasn't it? We should have been going up, you know, to the front instead of that.
So was there a lot of congestion on the roads then?
Terrible, yeah, terrible. In fact, we always on one of these low loaders, these big flat trucks, you know.
Queen Mary's.
Yes, right, with all the gear that we were trying to take back with us. And some gal was trying to pass us. And in France, they dig these ditches to drain the water off the roads. And she got into one of them, you know, and of course it was leaping up and down. And of course it prying, and we stopped. And we car was all bucked up. She had a couple of children with her, but so we had to take her on with us and take her on to Boulogne, you know. A bit awkward.
Were you suffering from air attack on the road as well?
No, we didn't get any of that. We got away with that. In fact, I don't think we had any bombing in Boulogne. Of course, Boulogne was congested with people, you know, all trying to get back, you know, and getting on various boats. But that was before Dunkirk, you know.
And in Boulogne, I mean, were a lot of army units evacuated?
Oh, yes, indeed. They used to do all the catering there. We used to go for grub steaks. Mainly was the army doing the catering there, you know, and looking after us. And, it was all in it. It's funny, although it was so dangerous, it was fun, you know. It was all in an adventure, you know. And
Because you were young at the time anyway.
Oh, yeah, I was only 19.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, well, you don't see any fear then, do you, no. See? Yeah. And but it was an adventure. And of course, come back to this country, and then I went all over the place then.
You got on a boat normally at Boulogne and came over and...
Oh, yes. No, yeah, there was no problem on that at all. It wasn't like the poor devils at Dunkirk, you know.
Did you have a naval escort or not?
I can't remember. We possibly did, you know, but because there was more, you know, several boats at Boulogne to get us all back. But of course, that was before the Deutschers got close, you know. Because when they got close to Dunkirk, those poor devils had to scramble out in the water and whatever. But no, we were all right, you know. At,
anyhow, you fetched up at Gatwick.
Yeah, we finished up at Gatwick. Where the airplanes went, I don't know, but we all slept in the racehorse in the stand. That was our billet.
Was there a racecourse in those days?
Yeah, it was a racecourse in them days. That's right. We were in the stand.
I know the old airport building they used to call the Beehive.
Yeah, well, of course, the airport is big now, of course, but it must have been there to take all our airplanes on, all these planes on. And... So we lived in the stand there. Where do we go from there? I think we went up to... we went up to Scotland. We went right up to Lossiemouth. And of course, there were proper billets there. And they were doing bombing on Stavanger in Norway, you know. Because all the Deutsches were in there then. And,
you're still working on Blenheims, or were you?
Oh, still on Blenheims then.
Yeah.
And... I stayed with that squadron for a year or so, I suppose.
What were Blenheims like? I mean, were they quite reliable?
No, they were. Well, they weren't as a death trap as it's a battle. We took a load of battles out there, and I think a lot got blown out of the sky. You know, and poured out. No, nobody had a hope.
Why were they death traps? They're just under
armed. Well, they had a single engine, the old battle.
Yeah.
And a pilot. And a gunner in the back, you know, in a kind of turret. But they didn't have a prayer against German fighters, and they can blow them out of the sky. Mm-hmm. Well, the old Blenheim, it was a twin engine. The Mark I Blenheim, which we started off with, they weren't too reliable. But then they had the Mark IV, which has a longer nose on it. In fact, they've got one, I think, at Duxford. It's the only one in existence that can fly. And we re-equipped with those and took them over, and that wasn't so bad. You know, they were quite nice. But,
were the engines reasonably reliable? What were they?
The old Mercurys, they were, yeah. In fact, I always get the video of the Duxbury show. I've got a 98 and a 99, you know, and I quite like watching them, you know. It'd be much better to go there, of course, but then you've got to get to Cambridge, get some accommodation and whatever, yeah, you know. Yeah. So I thought, well, watch it on the old boxer, you know. But, yes, well, I said, where did it go from? Yes, I was up at Lossiemouth. And then...
Did you go onto the heavies later on?
I never went to the heavies. I did go from there. I went to Coltishall, I think. That was Air Sea Rescue. And we had the old walruses. And then after a bit, we had Spitfires as well. But the Spitfires just dropped these packs and all these dinghy packs to pilots that were in the drink, you know, in the channel. And... So I was at Coltishall for a while, and that was very nice there, because it was like as if it was better than peacetime. I arrived at Coltishall, and I was greeted by an airman, and he took me to the sergeant's mess, and took me to my room, almost like a batman, you know. But I was only a sarge, you know, and I thought, well, this is grand. And then I went down the hangar the next day, and of course we had these old walruses. And of course we had a lot of retired bods back in, you know, the old auxiliaries, you know, as they were. And anyway, that was very nice there. And we had like kings in the sergeant's mess. Oh, he fiddled all this because he got moved after. He was a flight sergeant in there. We used to come down to jugged hare and stuff like this, you know. And in the bar at night, you could have pigs' trotters, you know. They were cold, you know, they'd been done. Very nice. I thought, it's a different world. I was eating better there than I would anywhere, you know.
Certainly out in Civic Street, they wouldn't have.
No, they wouldn't have had it. Of course they wouldn't have. No, and the eggs. Yeah. On the airfield, see, we could pick mushrooms, and you'd take them into the galley, and they'd do them for you with the eggs. And of course, it was eggs. You used to get all this. It was a black market, I think. But he, how he fiddled it, I don't know. But anyway, he was moved eventually because they got a bit suspicious. They couldn't pin anything on it, but they got rid of him, you know.
Well, the walruses were amphibians, so they could land on water and pick up people.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah. But then presumably only if the sea was calm.
Yeah, if the sea was bad, they just couldn't do it. They couldn't ever tip them over, you know. They were quite flimsy old things, you know.
They're quite antiquated too, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, because it had a pusher prop, you know, a four-bladed wooden prop, with a pusher, you know, at the back. And of course all our good training at Holton came in handy, because we had a course there. We used to do hulls and floats, and we used to have to repair these, and it had to be waterproof repairs, of course. And so it came in handy.
Were they wooden hulls, those planes?
No, they were metal hulled. Yeah, duralumin, I suppose they were in those days.
Treated for seawater, I suppose.
They're treated for seawater, yeah. Mm. And oh, yeah, I quite enjoyed that.
What were the crews like who flew them? I mean, were they young and enthusiastic, or...?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That all of them, every air crew I came across, were all enthusiastic all the time. They never looked ahead to danger or anything. They just got on with it, you know, and if they got the chop, it was too bad, you know. But, oh, no, they were all enthusiastic. I never know anyone that was dragging their heels on it, you know. As soon as they had to go, they were out there like a flash and gone, you know. Oh, yeah. Mm. So where did I go? I moved from there with them. We picked up Spitfires, and we moved down to Martlesham Heath near Ipswich. Now, this was run by the Americans there. They had P-47s, you know, the Thunderbolts. That wasn't bad there, because we had use of their PX, you know. You go in and get your big pack of fags and chocolate bars.
That was their naffy, wasn't it?
That was their kind of naffy, that's right. But of course, to eat with them, that wasn't so clever, because you picked up one of these great big trays and you go along and they just plopped it on. And if you had something with syrup, it could go on your eggs or anything, you know. They didn't care, you know. But we turned our noses up a bit at it, but what could you do? You got to eat, and there it is.
And I think the food was a lot better than...
Oh, the food was good, yes. The food was very good, because I mean, they used to ship all their own stuff in, you know, that they wanted.
Now, the Spitfires you worked on there, I mean, were they were an RAF squadron, presumably?
No, they were part of the. I was on 278 Air Sea Rescue, and the Spitfires were part of it.
Oh, I see.
So we had to have Spitfire pilots come in to do this.
It was an RAF detachment.
That's right, but it was only mainly for, I say, dropping these. We used to carry these dinghies underneath and just drop these dinghies for the blokes in the drink. I suppose they used the Spitfire because they could get there pretty smartly, you know, and do it and come back. Mm. So we stayed a while there, and then we moved to. Hornchurch in London, which
Hornchurch.
Yeah. Mm. So that was good, you know, because I had an aunt that lived in London, so I could get on the tube at Elm Park there and go and visit her on the weekends and things like that.
You're into about 1941 now, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, weren't affected much bombing out at Hornchurch. I suppose mainly why they put these airplanes there, but.
So what, they had intruder Spitfires there, did they, they used to fly intruder patrols?
Yes, they did have Spitfires there, actually, you know, squadrons based there as well as ours, you know.
So you were still on Air Sea Rescue?
We were still on Air Sea Rescue then.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So, and then where did we go from there? Oh, I was posted. Yeah, I was posted from there, and I went on... bullfighters. I went back to Coltishall, which, you know, I've been before, and went back on bullfighters, and the commanding officer there was Sir Max Aitken. You know, he was a son of Lord Beaverbrook, who ran the Daily Express in those days.
That's at Coltishall, yes.
It's at Coltishall, yeah. But he had his own personal bullfighter on a pan outside the hangar, and I was there with a each trade, and with myself, I was the sergeant. But the squadron, two flights that were further around the airfield, they didn't like it much because they could have done with me and the blokes up there and his airplane in amongst the lot, you know. But he had to have his separate, you know. He was very fussy. We used to polish all the oil pipes, copper oil pipes in the end. We used to polish all them, you know.
So you were his personal crew chief?
Yes. And if he went on leave, he looked after the bullfighter. We had an Oxford as well. It was a kind of communication thing to fly around, and we just looked after them. So of course, when he was on leave, we didn't have to do a lot, you know. And I think
so
that's
his plane stood idle while he was away.
Yeah. Then, and I think most of the senior NCOs on the other flights were envious, of course, of me because I had a cushy number, you know. But the aircrew side up there said, you know, the airplane ought to be up with us to use, you know, because it was just sitting there, you know, when he went on a week's leave or something. But he was very good, you know. He used to take us down to Wroxham all the flight for a bit of a jug up, you know. Commandeer the transport to take us down and back, you know.
So he'd drink with you?
Normally
officers didn't drink with
him. No, they didn't normally, but he'd take us out, you know, and only now and then, you know. It wasn't a regular thing. And
did he have much success against night flight?
Yes, they only carried, it was only the pilot and the radar navigator in the back, and then of course he had four cannons, I think, at the front. And, yes, he had some success because they used to bomb Norwich, you see, up there, and then they'd all get airborne, and I think he had a few down, you know. He'd have to depend on his navigator to get the fix from the radar, because it was elementary radar in them days, but it used to work, you know. They could get a fix on him and they'd shoot somebody down. Oh, well, very good he was.
What squadron was this?
This was 68 Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the engineer and officer, I remember him today, Lamey, his name was, L-A-M-E-Y, little chap. He didn't like this separate flight, say, on its own, and he go out of his way to give us a bad time if he could, you know. Anyway, whether he was instrumental on it, suddenly I was posted, you know, and the CO was away, see, on leave. So not much I could do about it, you know. I think he took a bit of a dim view and he come back there and I'd gone. And I was posted then to 197 Squadron. I went back up to Scotland to Drem
DREM.
DREM, yeah, with typhoons. And we had a Belgium seal there, pure old pure, sounded like the chap that's Agatha Christie one, you know. That was all right. Of course, they were cumbersome airplanes, big saber engines in them, you know, and a Kaufman starter, you know, whatever, a cartridge starter, because you couldn't turn them over, you know. But, you know, but
sabers weren't all that reliable, were they?
No, they weren't. They weren't reliable at all. Anyway, we're up there. They were doing sweeps out to Norway and what have you. And then we all moved down to Tangmere. This was getting near D-Day then. And we had to paint all these black and white stripes over them, you know. It was all right down at Tangmere. And we used to do all our complete squadron. We did all our own servicing as well, you know, all the major kind of servicing as well, to take them into the hangar and all that.
I mean, that amounted to engine changes and things.
All the big jobs, yeah. I was mainly out on the flight line, you see, with every day-to-day servicing. We had a tiger moth that the air crew to have a bit of fun with, you know, flying around and whatever. And then I stayed there with them. D-Day came, and then I was posted again. Then I went to Bramble Bay in Essex with Warwicks, and they used to carry, they were like a modified Wellington, but they carried a lifeboat underneath. So they flew out in a channel and dropped the whole lifeboat down, you know, for the air crew to scramble on and whatever. Of course, you had a...
Going back to typhoons, I mean, they were notorious for shedding their tails at one time, weren't they? The early ones.
Yeah, the early ones were, yes.
I mean, did you have any that happened to any of yours?
No, I don't. No, we didn't. I didn't. No.
They had a modification by then.
Yeah, I think we had the old 1B, which is the early model, you know. But then, of course, you gradually got replacement with the more up to date ones. And but no, they were all right. They were reasonably reliable there. We did had a few snags, but you had to keep a maximum ones on readiness all the time. You see, you couldn't have too many loafing around on the ground because it was always wanted. And of course, they were devastating to the Panzer Division with their tanks and all. They blew them away, you know, with their cannons.
And the rockets as well.
And the rockets. You know, they really tore them to pieces out there, so it was an asset. But, yeah, I said, when on to Warwicks at Bramble Bay. God, he always get a bit hazy now. Remembering where you all ended up.
Did you actually cross over the channel? And were you based abroad? Well, after D-Day, did you follow the forces up?
No. I stayed in Britain all the time. Yeah. Bramble. I stayed in Britain until 1945, and then I was posted to India, Dakota's 77th Squadron out there. Ray Paul was on the squadron out there, so I knew him before, you see. And I didn't do the full tour out there because all of a sudden they said all the fitter twos that are out here all got to go back to the UK. So we've all got places for them.
So were they short of
Short of that trade, yeah. So they brought us all back, and I ended up at Abingdon to start with. Then we re-equipped to Valettas from the Dakota, and then we moved here at Benson, and we were a lodger unit up there because we were in an old tin hangar next to the Exalted Queen's Flight, you see. And so we stayed there for a while. Then I was promoted to flight sergeant, you see. So I could, the CEO said, oh, I'll keep you here, but you can't have two flight sergeants on that unit, you know, because I was a sarge, and I had another sarge, and he's still alive. We both go to Lyneham for the reunions with 30 Squadron. And I had to go to Abingdon. filled a post over there, and I was on the ferry training unit. We had vampires, meteors. It was a training unit, FTU they called it. So I was over there, and then it was a bit of a ding-dong here because I'd gone when CO found out I disappeared and all this, but still didn't matter. And then from there, I was on 30 Squadron then with Dakotas, and from there we went to Oakington, Cambridgeshire. And then just before the airlift, and this is in 48, we went out to Schleswig-Holstein as a kind of practice camp that we were doing paratrooping in oil at the time. And there was, I think, 47 Squadron Halifaxes were out there as well. So we're,
is Jim Manning on your squadron?
Yes.
Well?
Yeah, yes. 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 He's on the squadron, and then it's when the airlift started. The way I got to know, I was in the sergeant's mess, and somebody come and said, "Is it an airman at the front door wants to talk to you?" See. So I thought, so I went out to see him. I said, "What's up? What's the matter?" He said, "How many people are you taking then?" Taking where? I was unaware of all this.
This is at Oakington, isn't it?
Yes, how these airmen got to know, I don't know. Because the CO hadn't even phoned me then to tell me, you know, we were going. But this airman, I said, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, shortly after, the CO rang me and told me we were off to, on the airlift. Mm. But myself and about half a dozen airmen, I suppose, of various trades, we were dropped off in Bukkeburg. And there we joined what they call a VAF, which is visiting aircraft flight. We did have a shift system, but if there was no activity at night, of course you didn't have to go in, you know. And we run what they called a P-19 service from Bukkeburg to Berlin or Ghetto. Mainly passengers and all that.
P-19, that's for a passenger flight, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
On Dakotas?
All Dakotas, yeah, because the crews that all went to Wunsdorf, Lübeck, with the Dakotas, particularly 30 Squadron crews like old Ray Paul and Manning and Zikaki and all them, they used to get whipped out in time to come down to Bukkeburg to fly this service. In fact, I had a flight up with Zikaki up to Berlin and back, but it was all in one day, of course, and right back. But yeah, I spent my tour there, you see, which wasn't bad at all. It was nice working, and I had a bunk at the end of a wooden hut, because that's all there was there then. But they were building a brand new sergeant's mess, brand new, you know.
Bukkeburg.
Bukkeburg. Mm. And one day the station warrant officer sent for me and said, you can move into the sergeant's mess. I said, but I'm only detached, you know, I'm not permanent staff. I decide who goes in, he said. So move your butt and get in there. So I had a nice bunk over there, upstairs, you know. Everything was brand new. Unfortunately, of course, it was built by the airfield construction flight, you know. The water system didn't work properly, and blokes used to forget, you know, they turn a tap on, and no water, but they forget to turn it off again, you see, and then with the pressure come on it, out of the bowl, through the floor, and we had a brand new dance floor in there, all new wood, you know, a block. Of course, you come down, it's up like this, you know, did it twice.
Dance floor, do you have any women there?
Well, we used to, the only women, we had some blasts there, but mainly the women used to come over, and the army women over at Bad Oeynhausen, they used to come over to our dances and whatever. And of course, there was wives there, because people had wives there then in them days. Most of them there wasn't quarters or anything. They lived out in town, you know, around. And we had a 1948 New Year's Eve, we had Super Bowl at the Sergeant's Mess, you know, fancy dress. Oh, very good. Yeah.
That was in the middle of the airlift, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was getting near the end of it then, of course. Because it finished, about the middle of 49, I suppose, around there.
Yeah.
But I was lost out there, and I kept soldiering on when all of that were flying back to UK, and I was still there. I was quite happy about it. In fact, the senior technical officer on there, he sent for me one day and said, would you like to, he said, you've done a good while, Eddie, would you like to finish your tour? I said, oh, I don't know about that, you know. You can go home and get all your gear, you know, and all that. He was quite content to have me there, you know, but I didn't in the end. And so, of course, eventually they caught up with me.
Yeah. I'll change the tape.